It's 841 on the Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. I direct your attention to our website, jeffexchange.org. You can check out all of the things that we do here on the program. They get recorded and put there. Well, I mean, they're put there in advance, and then we add the recordings after the programs have aired, but you get the idea. Similar information and pictures of our studio guests and other social media goodies on our Facebook page. We invite you to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Exchange, and or take part in the program as it happens. You're welcome to join the conversations if you have something just burning to ask or pressing to add. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Human beings can run fast and jump high, but we can't fly. Darn that being born without wings thing. We've done much to make up for the lack, though. Just look up on a clear day and you're likely to see as many planes as birds. People who like to fly tend to flock together, rather like the birds they emulate. One example is the Rogue Valley Flying Club, which brings together pilots and planes to allow more adventures aloft. Two guests with us bearing the same last name, Don Hickman and Marguerite Hickman. Good to see you guys both here from the Rogue Valley Flying Club.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
So how long have either one of you been flying?
We've both been flying for about 20 years. Oddly enough, I worked for the fire department for many years, and we were sitting around the dinner table one evening, and four firefighters, and we said, what would it take to become a firefighter or become a pilot? The next day, we went down to what was Logan and Rivas and signed up for a ground school. So there were four of us initially that started to fly together, and we met Marguerite, who was currently working at Oregon Department of Forestry, and she said, you know, I've always had a love of aviation, and I'd like to be part of your group. So she became the fifth member of our flying group. And the nice thing about that is whenever we made advances in our flying, you know, doing solos or coming back from across country, we were always there to support each other.
Well, that's interesting to know, though, that you guys were like a lot of us listening right now, wondering what does it take to get flying, and you asked that very same question, and that led to what eventually came to become the Rogue Valley Flying Club.
Exactly.
Was it for fun, Marguerite, or to get places, or both?
Well, actually for both, but what I distinctly remember is I was in sixth grade at Lone Pine Elementary School, and we took a tour at the Medford Airport of the Mercy Flights hangar, which I believe then was all volunteer. And the gentleman who gave the tour, who I haven't figured out who that person was today, but the pilot, he learned to fly when he was 12, and that's how old I was. And so I went, oh, I could do that too. It took me another 18 years to figure that out, or something, maybe longer. But do the math.
But at age 12, you thought, well, I could become a pilot.
Yeah, and I was very interested in it.
Any connections to your careers? I know in particular from you having worked for years at the Oregon Department of Forestry, Marguerite, in firefighting, that I've been up in planes with ODF people who were acting as the spotters and overall managers of the effort up there. So, I mean, does this have anything to do with what you did there?
Not directly. You know, I did go on a few of the aerial reconnaissance flights, but that wasn't my main duties. And, you know, I've not been paid to fly because I'm not a commercial pilot. I do remember during my flight instruction, just learning to fly, going to a aviation management seminar, which was all about airplane accidents and how to avoid them. It probably made me a better pilot.
Okay. A couple of questions then about learning to fly. How long does it take, Don?
Well, it's the basic requirements are 40 hours, 20 with a pilot, with a instructor, and then 20 of solo. But typically, it's a little bit longer than that, depending on the amount of and frequency that you're flying.
And do you all have to learn on a single engine plane first before you move up to anything else?
Typically, people start in a Cessna 150 or, you know, a single engine. We have two Cessna 172s.
How hard is it? I mean, you know, anybody who's driven a car thinks, "Whoa, how hard can it be?" So you got a few controls for your hands and a few controls for your feet, but you also have a couple different directions you can move, or at least on the surface of the earth, you tend to move straight ahead or backwards or something.
Well, when you take off for the first time, it's a little overwhelming to have those different dimensions in flight. You know, you can roll, you can pitch it up. You can do a lot of different maneuvers. So it's pretty exciting to have that freedom similar to a bird.
And Marguerite, can you remember what your first flight was like when you had the controls to yourself the first time?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I remember my first solo, and, you know, I had been waiting for, like, probably three lessons. I was wearing the same T-shirt because one of the traditions is they cut your tail off, and it was one of my safety T-shirts for work. And so finally, we pull up, and the flight instructor said, okay, don't shut down the engine. I'm going to get out, and you're going to go solo. And I was so excited, and I remember taking off and just starting to go over the threshold, and I was, you know, maybe 50 feet off the ground. And that was when my stomach sunk. I was probably almost in tears and thought, oh, I have to put this thing down. And it went just fine. But it's that initial, you know, I always had somebody next to me that was ready to help me if something, if I was doing something wrong. And that, mm-hmm. you know, it was a real realization. At the same time, it was total exuberation.
And what was the landing like on that flight?
I think my landings were fine. I don't remember them being poor.
You lived.
I mean, yeah. Well, that's one thing we do say is that any landing you walk away from is a good one. So, but no, your flight instructor is not going to cut you loose until you're ready for it, and they're confident that you can do what you need to do to fly safely and put that plane back down.
Okay, you're going to have to explain that expression a little more. Cut your tail off.
It's cut the tail of your shirt. So they cut a little square out of your shirt. They put the date of when you soloed and sign it. And just an expression.
And what is done with that? Is it ended back in your socks drawer or something? Or is it mounted?
Well, we have a bathroom that is all aviation themed decoration. And our both of our tails are hanging in there in a collage. So,
are there other tails in that collage or just
ours? Other?
Okay. So Don, tell us about the formation of the club itself.
Well, in 2012, we had one of our flight instructors, Don Carpin, realized that we didn't have any training going on. The fixed base operators were not around anymore that had rental aircraft, and we were really, really low on aircraft that we could fly. So he kicked around the idea of forming a flying club. So he pulled together what he considered called the Dedicated Dozen. It's a group of folks that were interested in aviation and forming this club. So we all got together in a room. We had folks writing policies and procedures, basically our how we were going to run this club. And in 2013, in June, we finally kicked it off.
So it was out of necessity, though, in part, you mentioned, because the fixed base operator, which is the explain what a fixed base operator is, but you saying that not active at the Medford Airport anymore?
Well, they provide fuel, maintenance, and avionics and so forth. But the flight school portion of it went away. So we had a couple flight instructors that had their personal airplanes. And if you're learning to fly with them, you had access to them. The only other aircraft that were accessible were in Ashland and Grants Pass. So what we figured is if we, you know, pulled our resources together, found an aircraft to rent, we could form a flying club and, you know, grow the general aviation community.
And how many people since the club formed 3 years ago have learned how to fly in that time?
We have 26 members flying currently. But we have two levels of membership. We have folks that don't have their own aircraft. So we have 26 people flying our club airplanes. And then we have 26 members that have their own airplanes that are still part of the club and associate membership.
We're talking to members of the Rogue Valley Flying Club, Don and Marguerite Hickman in the studio with us. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your questions about what it takes to get airborne legally. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Well, my question is a little off base, but, you know, like in the movies where the pilots have been killed or something like that, and then some passenger jumps in and flies. So how complicated a modern jet? Like, for instance, since I'm not a pilot, could I fly a Cessna, or could the Cessna pilot possibly fly, you know, a jumbo jet? How complicated is a jumbo jet?
All right, so is it possible?
Anyway, that's my question.
All right, thanks, John. So can you actually talk a pilot down, I guess, is the question, as has happened in the movies. I remember it happening to Doris Day, and it didn't happen in an airplane, the movie, too, and some other things.
Well, you know, I don't want to minimize the talent it takes and skill it takes to land an airplane, but there certainly have been circumstances where a less than experienced pilot or non-flying aviation enthusiast has been talked down by, you know, like a tower when maybe their spouse or somebody that's with them, you know, has had some kind of a medical experience that hasn't allowed them to finish flying. So I don't, it's a great question. As in any of our professions, Hollywood tends to maybe over-exaggerate what the abilities are. I would say that, you know, if I were on a jet and there was a failure in the cockpit and there was nobody else that had more skill than I did, I would certainly try to put that jet down. But I've never had jet training or jet flying experience, so I don't know what that would look like. But I would certainly make that effort.
As long as we're talking about Hollywood myths on flying, let's talk about some of the other misconceptions people might have. I mean, what was the biggest surprise the first time you went up in a plane and got the controls in your hand?
Well, for me, it was pretty amazing that when you pull the power back, how far these things will actually glide once you get them trimmed up. You know, it's not like flying a rock. You know, you have time to think about, you know, where you might land it and get the plane slowed down and get it configured, you know, to land in a pasture or on an old road or something.
So it flies pretty well, you're saying, when the engine has failed.
It's a very stable platform. Unlike a jet, you know, they need a lot of thrust behind them to keep them in the air. With a small single-engine airplane, you know, they're fairly light. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they do glide a lot better.
How differently do planes handle, I wonder, Margarita? Have you flown in just one type of plane, or have you flown in several now?
I've flown in several, and, you know, certainly they all have, you know, their own different characteristics, but the ones that, you know, we have either owned and spent most of our time in are very similar. They were all Cessnas. But, you know, you go to something with a higher speed, a little more aerodynamic, you know, it's kind of like the difference between driving the pickup and the sports car. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, they do handle different.
Is there a chauvinism for brands? I mean, if you're a Cessna pilot, you can think, you know, about Pipers because like the way that Chevy and Ford drivers are.
You know, I'm just going to say that I don't think it's a brand thing, mm-hmm. but you know, we learned to fly in what's called a high wing, which is a Cessna, and I have never liked a low wing aircraft because I can't see below. And my experience is that people who learn in a low wing, they just don't like the high wing. So, you know, so I don't know if it's a brand issue as much as it is just the style of
the wing configuration.
Plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Don, you mentioned associate membership in Rogue Valley Flying Club, which is for people who do not fly. Is that right?
Well, they typically have their own aircraft. And on that level of membership, it's $15 a month. And it's the camaraderie more than anything, bringing everyone together. On the weekends, we have flyouts. So we can have upwards of 15 airplanes flying to, you know, Montague or the coast. Sometimes we fly to McMinnville, to the museum up there.
Evergreen Air and Space Museum.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's absolutely wonderful. And then occasionally we'll fly down to Powers just a little bit east of Bandon. Mm-hmm. It's a big grass strip. It's like landing on a big patch of carpet. We walk into town, and I think we increase the population in town by quite a bit. We usually go to a little restaurant and have lunch.
How long a flight from Medford to Powers?
It's about 45 minutes or so.
That would take you probably 3 1/4 to drive there, right?
Probably at least almost 3 hours.
So that's not a bad afternoon thing, Marguerite.
And Jeff, you know, I would just say that the associate member is for anybody who has a love of flying, even if they don't have a plane. And sometimes on these flyouts, you know, we'll have an empty seat. And so somebody that's an associate member that doesn't have a plane, you know, can take one of those seats.
So you mentioned $15 a month for the associate members. How much for the full members?
For the flying member, it's a $750 initial buy-in, and it's a $50 maintenance fee per month. And what the maintenance fee covers is the hangar, insurance, and maintenance on the aircraft. And then along with that, they can rent the aircraft for $80 an hour with fuel. And then we have one it's a instrument-rated aircraft with a little more avionics in it. We rent that one for $90 an hour. But compared to other aircraft, as we've looked around the the area and over in Boise and different flying clubs were substantially lower than a lot of other clubs.
I'm intrigued by this idea of renting planes. I mean, those of us who don't have pilot's licenses or, you know, there's a whole world of stuff we don't know. But does anybody ever have any trepidation about renting a plane to someone?
I haven't heard any. Our aircraft are so well maintained, and we do a pre-flight on every airplane prior to flying it. You know, we lower the flaps. We make sure, you know, hinges are in place. You know, all the parts are moving correctly, and, you know, there's no water in the fuel. So we do a pretty good look over before we jump in and fire it up.
That's part of the thing, too, is people going to check out a plane and know a pilot's credentials more thoroughly than they would ever know about a car and a driver before a relationship develops there.
Well, and before you can rent a plane, whether it's from the flying club or another organization, you typically have to go through an hour of flight with an instructor to demonstrate your ability. So, you know, it's not like a rental car where you show up and show them your driver's license and you drive out with the car. You actually have to demonstrate your skill. Mm-hmm. So
based on some of the numbers you're flinging around, and we haven't even talked about cost of planes yet, this could be a fairly spendy avocation, I'm thinking.
Well, I guess it depends on where you want to spend your money. You know, it's some people do, you know, snowmobiles and recreational vehicles, and, you know, flying is just another avenue and a tool to get to where you want to get.
How common are flying clubs like the Rogue Valley Flying Club? Are we able to find lots of other examples around the country, pretty much like what you've created here?
There are a lot of flying clubs around the country. In the Rogue Valley, we're the only one. But as you get up in the Willamette Valley with a large population base, you have a few more.
You guys have some fun out there from the sounds of it.
That's great.
How many different kinds of aircraft are you trained on? I'm curious now about when we were talking about instrument ratings and stuff like that, how many different kinds of planes you guys are each trained for?
Well, I guess I would say for me it's three. We have a 182, I've flown a 172 and a 150, so that's progressively smaller. So basically the same aircraft, just a little more
single
power.
Engine each time.
Single
mm-hmm.
engine.
And how about you?
And I've flown the same three airplanes, but I've also had the opportunity to fly a Cirrus with an instructor and the experimental class also.
Okay, all kinds of flying fun with the Rogue Valley Flying Club. Don and Marguerite Hickman, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Well, thank you.
All right, that'll do it for this hour of the Exchange. We'll talk about women throughout Northwest history and their contributions in hour number two.